Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. I'm really excited about my guest tonight. I had Dr. Michael Masters on a while ago on my anniversary show, and I mentioned that I didn't think there were a lot of young people getting into this, and that was this topic, that is, and that's because that's what I was seeing when I was going to conferences. And he said, oh, you're totally wrong about that. And so I looked around and he's right. There are some young people that are really taking this topic seriously. They know how to use this thing called the internet, which us older folk are not quite so good at, and social media the right way, and search engine optimization, all that stuff. So I'm really excited to have Christina Gomez on. She is a Gen Z and she'll be coming on in just a minute. Our blog this week is a UFO occupant in Wheeling, West Virginia. This is about the Braxton County, the Flatwoods Monster, a very strange occurrence. And I don't really ever know if they know exactly what that was. But so that from Charles Lear, as usual, welcome. Thank you so much, Charles, for all the work you do. And again, welcome, everyone. And we are bringing in Christina right now. Welcome to the show, Christina.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I know you have a show tonight, right? You
do your show.
It starts when this one ends, right? Yeah. So we'll have to steer people to that, put a link in after this show is done. But thank you very much for being willing to come on. And you've done quite a bit in a short time. But first of all, before we get started, I want to know what got you fascinated in this topic to start with.
Well, I think as someone that has a very, very loving father, he was the one that got me interested in the topic. And he was a huge Twilight Zone fan. I think, obviously, by now, my favorite TV show of all time. But for those that don't know, it's like a very old 1950s, early 1960s TV show, still in black and white. And it covers topics, all things that are strange and mysterious, and especially during that time where it was very taboo to talk about, this show in particular, it never really gave you a definitive answer onto what was going on. And the show always ended in a way that was very open, that you had so many more questions, like, oh, what actually happened or what could happen next? So because of that particular TV show, I became so interested in the topic, but also into starting to ask questions. And for those that remember being very young, or for those that have children, you might know that when they hit the age of like 5 or 6, they start asking why. But they ask why all the time. Mommy, mommy, why is the sky blue? Daddy, daddy, why can't fish breathe when they're out of the water? And things of this nature. And I think we need to constantly have that curiosity. We need to constantly ask those questions. Why? Even though they might be asked so many times, if you don't hear the answer, go ahead and ask that question, regardless of how many times it's been asked. You need to go ahead and find those answers for yourself. And when, with that kind of passion, I moved far away from home to go and study in university, and I had a lot of time in my hands. But, you know, I'm no one special. I'm just a young person with a lot of questions and an enthusiasm to find the truth. And I decided to do something constructive with it, which led me to my YouTube channel, which is why I'm here today.
Yeah, excellent. Well, you know, I say the same thing. I'm no one special either. You know, I had a sighting, I had a curiosity. And I think, you know, I saw that you interviewed Avi Loeb, and one of his things that he says is about the questions, have questions like a child. He says that. And that's how science, you know, moves forward, to have these questions and curiosity. And that's true. And I'm not sure if we'll ever find out what the heck's going on, but there is certainly a lot of questions. And I remember talking to my friend Dean out in California, and he said, maybe it's, we got to find out what is the right question to ask, you know? So it's great. I remember my son, when he was about 3 or 4, he said to me one day, we were driving in the car, and he said, Pa, what makes clouds stay up? And I was like, well, I don't know. They do. That's why they do. So you're Gen Z. A question I always had is, all right, what's the generation behind you? Is it like ZZ, like ZZ Top? Tell me you know who ZZ Top is, right? You know,
I know the name, but okay. I'm not familiar with his music.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
But I think the generation before mine is Generation Y.
Oh.
And then it's Millennials before that, but I could be wrong.
No, I mean after. What's the next one after Z?
Oh, it's X, Generation X.
Oh, I think. Okay.
But please, right. In the live chat, let us know.
Correct us. Google it. We can't.
Google it. Oh, see, and that's the interesting thing in today's world is now children, they don't ask their parents questions anymore. Now they ask Alexa. They ask Google. They ask their friends.
I have one in the room, so we got to be careful. I've had that happen a couple of times. But anyway, you're right. I mean, you know, and it's the same thing. As a joke, I say our smartphones are making us dumber. And it's just that we don't have to spell. You know, you don't really have to learn how to spell. You don't have to learn how to add. I know I'm sounding like an old geezer, but it's true. Like we have all this, everything so optimal that we don't really need to think all that much about certain things, you know, like adding or trying to research. Now, being an appraiser with antiques and things like that and history, I did my research at a library. Have you heard of, you've heard of libraries, right? Yeah.
I grew up in a library. I love them so much.
All right. But that's what the only place I could get my information like historical societies, things like that. That was it. And now there's all kinds of information. So
there is. And, you know, with the internet, I feel like I see our global society as having all the tools available to really advance ourselves towards becoming a type one civilization on the Kardashev scale. So, and you know what? I think we take internet for granted. It wasn't even a concept that could even been imagined as a reality 40 years ago. All of the wealth of knowledge at our fingertips, the history of our civilization, to the discoveries, the science, the journals, the shared collective human experience, all in one place. But what do we do with the internet instead? We squabble. We let our egos run amok and compete for social standing. We obsess over entertainment and so-called icons and celebrities. And you know what? If we knew how to really manage the internet, we wouldn't be in this situation that we are now in this entertainment malaise. We could all be very well educated if we used it properly.
Wow. I like that stump you're on because I personally got kind of discouraged with social media myself. And so I just do it as bare bones and I'm on it for, you know, like to promote the show or, you know, that type of thing, or to connect to people like guests and things like that. A lot of people use Facebook Messenger. I do that type of thing. But as far as like, I have people that contact me all the time and they say, oh, you know, the UFO world is in turmoil and there's, you know, this person against this faction against that faction and, you know, Lou Elizondo's disinformation and, you know, on and on and on. You hear all these type of things. And so I don't get involved in any of that because I'm not in that realm. So, I mean, I do get some hate mail. That's okay. You know,
we all do.
Because I have certain opinions and, but anyway, so, you know, if we can handle this socially to move forward instead of backward, that's what kind of worries me, you know, in the future, which way we go with our technology. I had, I've talked about this a number of times. I had an astrophysicist that was a visiting NASA scientist on my show, and he said that his colleagues, along with himself, would... posit that any civilization that can get through the bottleneck of technology without blowing themselves up will travel the stars. So I think it's true. It's a bottleneck of technology. You know, no, we're seeing that right now.
It is. And he's not wrong. And the way I see it, if we don't destroy ourselves as a species, then our future will inevitably lead us humans placing foot in our solar system and then beyond to other star systems. But the question is, how far away is that in our future? Well, if by our own natural technological development, maybe a long time. But if we're being visited by other spacefaring species and open full contact is coming, maybe in my lifetime, we could be there in space. And the biggest thing is having that curiosity, that imagination, but also having the basic knowledge on how to use the internet and the best way to share the information that we acquire. This is why we have these UFO podcasts, these YouTube channels, so on and so forth. We have to fill in those gaps into where the mainstream media falls short. And I think we're doing so much for our civilization as a whole by talking about this amazing and mysterious phenomenon.
Yes. Yeah. And it's changed so much. One of the questions I was going to ask you tonight was, did you happen to catch when the 2017 New York Times article came out, December 16, when that came out, the Pentagon was studying UFOs and that auroras, I forget what it was called. But did you happen to catch that or start hearing about it? You know, what made you feel more comfortable in looking into this topic?
So when this article came out, I was still in high school. I was just 17 years old. So I wasn't very interested in like reading the New York Times and being involved in politics and being incredibly serious about the topic. And I see you laughing, but it's true. It really is true. So I didn't get very serious about it until college. And I had a lot to catch up on starting from 2017 and then making my way through to all the more modern knowledge, but then also the history of all the UFO sightings, all these bits and pieces, the science aspect, the abductions, and so on and so forth. So when this article hit in 2017, I was oblivious to it. I didn't even know it existed because it wasn't the talk in school, right? In high school, for you that have kids, or for those that are listening, they talk about really boring things, and UFOs is usually never a topic unless it's related to maybe a TV show or a new movie that came out. But other than that, the actual politics to it, I guess, in this sense, no, I didn't know anything about it at the time.
I was only laughing because I thought you were so much better off not hearing any of that stuff. But anyway, here's a question that popped up. Oh, Lee Spiegel just put in, it's glowing. I'll just pull up his text. The title to it is, and thank you, Lee, is New York Times is glowing or auras and black money. Yeah, along, I think there was one more. But anyway, here's a message. And thank you for putting that in caps. If you have a question you want me to ask, put it in caps. So what do you think the generational perceptions affect the phenomenon? I don't know exactly what he means. Do you understand that question?
To my understanding, I think he means how does my generation, the perspectives affect the phenomenon in the sense of let me backtrack. So how I see my generation handling the subject, it's kind of like they shrug their shoulders like this. Yeah, I already know that. But they don't understand the history and the amount of effort that is being placed into it. You know, we grew up with the internet. We grew up with a phone in our cell phones a phone in our hands as soon as we left the womb. All right. We were like, I'm ready. I'm already addicted. Yeah. So for us, getting that information isn't difficult. It's not even a question. It's like, yeah, obviously. But when it comes to, you know, Project Blue Book, when it comes to that article in 2017, when it comes to the push for a UAP office, the preliminary report, these are things that aren't necessarily considered, or even, I guess, in some respects, classified as important for some of people in my generation, just because it might be a little bit too complex, because there isn't really any foundation to build on. And with my channel specifically, Shifting the Paradigm Shifts and Mysteries with the History, it's all about building that foundation for those that don't know anything about the topic, either for my generation or for any age that is just now jumping in, really after last year when the mainstream media was really placing serious coverage on the topic leading up to the UAP preliminary report in June. And I think that was a really big eye-opener for a lot of people in general to start asking questions like, what? The government? What are they doing? What's going on? We're going to be getting reports every 6 months? What? Like, what? I want to know more about this. And there are a lot of UFO podcasts. And I think that when I was first starting, I would try to listen in, but they were so advanced at the time. They're talking about topics that I didn't even understand, or stories that they would kind of touch on and then like jump to another thing. And I'm thinking, hold on, what's Roswell? What happened?
Yeah.
And so for me, my biggest purpose is, one, to learn with my audience, because I am learning every single day. I didn't wake up one day knowing everything. I don't think that'll ever happen. But so there's that. But then it's also helping others just to have a solid foundation to build on from there, or they can start reading articles. They can start reading the Politico, the New York Times, when they talk about the UFO phenomenon. They can go to someone else's podcast and like get what they're saying versus going in blind and saying, I have no idea what's going on.
I agree with that. And I do apologize to, I do get a lot of new listeners to the show, and I apologize because I'm guilty of jumping right into a topic that I assume everyone knows about. I've done that a number of times. And my friend Alejandro Rojas and I, I'm not sure if you know him. He's been a little bit quiet last year or so. But he and I have had many conversations where, okay, so it's Roswell, but we got to give the nutshell because there's new people listening and they'll go away if they don't understand. And that's really the truth.
It's a catch-22 because you have listeners that have been in the field for decades and are like, oh, Roswell again, click off. But then you have new people that are brand new and they're saying, what's Roswell? I want to know. So it's this balance that you have to play with. But I think, you know, every person that has their own show or podcast or news article knows who their audience are, and then from there can kind of gauge what they need to do and how they need to approach it. But in my case, I'm just dealing with brand new people that don't know much about the topic, just like how I was when I first started.
So how do you rope them in? What is the catch that gets them like, I'm going to check out this YouTube channel or something like that?
For myself, what I really say is I have a lot of questions and I want the answers to these questions. I am never going to claim that I know everything. I'm never going to say, yes, pay me $1,000 and I will tell you the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I can't say that because I am learning every single day, and my audience, I try to say that as often as I can because I don't want people, one, to place me in a high pedestal thinking, oh, Christina Gomez knows everything. Oh my goodness. I need to ask her. I need her to write a book or something, which I am writing one, but that's besides the point. But okay. It's it's really just telling people, I have a lot of questions. I want answers, and let's go through this together.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And do you use, you must use like social media to get people? I mean, that is a really good tool to get people your own age. I mean, everyone's on social media of some kind. And I've heard of Instagram. I don't know what it is. I've never been on it, you know, that type of thing. So a dinosaur. Yeah, the dinosaurs. We're kind of trying to get into this in ways that we can.
Yes. Well, with social media, and I just want to say I'm noticing people are saying that there's an echo in the live stream. So maybe I'm coming through too loud on your speakers.
Okay.
So let me kind of like back up unless you have headphones, maybe that can like block the echo. How's that?
That should be better. Thank you for those in the chat. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
But yeah, I couldn't hear it on this side. So I moved my mic closer to me. That should do it.
Perfect. So when it comes to social media, it's a battle. It's a whole can of worms in itself. And for those that don't know much about it, it can be incredibly overwhelming when there are so many platforms. You have Twitter, you have Facebook, you have Instagram, you have Pinterest, you have all of these other video streaming channels as well, like platforms like Twitch and Vimeo and all of these things. LinkedIn. So it's a lot. It is a lot. But I feel like once you have your basic formula, once you have a nice framework, going and just posting, right, your show everywhere, it becomes a little bit easier and a little bit less stressful, along with every platform also has their own little like foundation formula as well, in the sense of some social media platforms like hashtags, some don't, depends on how many you do, this, that, and the other, how like the word requirement you need, like for YouTube you need a certain word requirement. So with all of it, it requires a good amount of research, but once you have your foundation down, it becomes a lot easier. Now when you're dealing with like private messages or like comments, then yeah, it can be, that part I think is the most overwhelming. But blasting out the show is easy. I think it's the little details, the little paying attention to details that are the most difficult. But as long as, for those that are listening that want to start their own podcast for whatever niche that may be, just put yourself out there, put yourself on every single social media that you can, and then go from there. Because if you just do one platform, like let's just say Facebook, yeah, you might do well, but you won't do great.
Right. Just, I don't know why I thought of this now, but I want to announce it is next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow on the 19th at 11 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. Pacific time. I have two people from the West Coast that are, I'm going to be on the Everything Else show. This is another show I do on this YouTube channel where it's topics that I'm interested in. My listeners may not be interested in them at all, but this one in particular is on climate change. Professor Rebecca Newman, she's a MIT PhD, and she is really involved in climate. So is Megan Colleen with her master's degree. And also we're going to be talking about the climate change and the science of it and the interesting things that maybe we don't know. And I'm taking questions for that. That's the reason I'm putting that out there now. So if anyone wants to email me questions for them, my email address is martin@podcastufo.com. So where were we? So I want to know what your very first video, when you did analysis, did you have a YouTube channel already established and you said, okay, I'm going to put this up. I'm going to go through this video. I'm going to enhance it. How did that all happen?
For me, I kind of wanted to ease in to the whole YouTube thing. And I originally used to make music. So I used a program called Acid Pro, and I would just kind of make music that I liked, or even kind of like ASMR sleep music, because I don't sleep very well. So I wanted to create something that I could go ahead and really enjoy and sleep to. But as time progressed, I wanted to, well, I also experienced with music and space ambient music as well. And that was a lot of fun. Now I don't have time for that. And I wish I did. But as time progressed and I was getting interested in the topic, I wasn't prepared to just kind of like jump in completely blind and being like talking to people that I didn't even know what to talk about. So I started with doing UFO analysis videos where I would collect videos from YouTube, from MUFON and other platforms, and go ahead and zoom it in, stabilize it, add filters if it needed it, and then place it on YouTube and allow people to decipher for themselves what they considered these UFOs to be. Because as we know, UFOs mean unidentified flying object. That's all it means, right? But so when someone sees something in the sky, maybe it could be a drone, but simply because I don't know what it is, to them, it is classified as a UFO. And I feel like when you zoom in, attempt to stabilize and do the things that I did, it could have been easier for some people to kind of see if it did look man-made or didn't, if it did look maybe controlled by AI intelligence or not, things of this nature. And from there, I was like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable with this topic. I'm doing my research behind the scenes to really, because I really want to start getting involved. I really want to start having this conversation with my peers in college and with those on the streets. Doesn't matter. But whenever I would bring up this topic in school, they would just kind of look at me and they're like, really? You really want to do this right here, right now? Well, let me have a few drinks first, and then maybe we can talk about the UFO topic. And I'm thinking, no, I want to talk about this right here, right now. I want to do this completely with the proper mindset, but people weren't on that bandwagon at the time. So from there, I decided, okay, you know what? I'm gonna really start talking to people and try to get my questions answered to the best of their ability, whoever I speak to. And then it slowly evolved to shifting the paradigm where I started interviewing UFO researchers and enthusiasts. My very first guest was Alien Girl 111, Amy. And she, because of her, we're here today. But It was hard. I think when you're podcasting or when you're talking to anyone, right, especially on camera, it's not easy. I don't think anyone's just born to do it and you're like amazing. There are, as one of my friends has told me, who's been in the podcasting world for quite a few years, he says, your last show is always going to be your worst. Your next show is always going to be your best because you're constantly evolving and you're constantly, as time progresses, feeling more comfortable with your thoughts, your opinions, and how to go ahead and present yourself to people that want to know more about what you're researching. And that's really how it all started. And then it evolved to another show called Mysteries with a History, where I talk about all the topics that fall under the umbrella of the unexplained and the mysterious, and with my co-host Jimmy Church from Fade to Black. And we just kind of talk about each week is a different topic. Last week was extra dimensionals. And I just feel like for those that are, again, that are new to the topic, that don't know anything, that need a foundation, that's a great place to go ahead and start from the ground up, because we are hitting every single topic with the mindset that maybe the people that are listening don't know anything about it. Let's start from the very beginning and then make our way through all the stories or through the people that have go ahead and documented these stories, researchers and things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great that you're doing that. And I think it is, you know, one of the things I noticed that you did when you were analyzing those videos is you also said you didn't give an opinion. You just kind of, well, here it is, and here it is enhanced. And I appreciate that because I think opinions, you know, you see something visually and you know that everyone's going to make up their own mind. Like one of the videos I saw, I thought, well, that looked like a white and a black balloon maybe twirling. But there was one video you had, I think you called it the triangle video, South Carolina maybe, or North Carolina or something like that. That looked pretty amazing. So Were people actually sending you some videos as well?
Yes, yes. I had people sending me in videos, but I would also go ahead and try to find them that didn't really have very good descriptions on YouTube. Or even there have been some people on YouTube specifically where they'll post their UFO sighting and they don't have any subscribers, they don't have any views. So it's also bringing those videos to a bigger audience as well, for people to make up their own minds on what they think this topic or what that video is. And with this topic, it is riddled with opinions and bias and people saying that they have all the answers when that simply might not be the case. And with that, I didn't want to fall into that mud pit where I think that my opinion, my bias is not important. It shouldn't affect the data that I provide to people that are listening. I should provide all of the information that I can get my hands on, regardless of if it's a hoax or if it's real, and allow people to make up their own assumptions on the topic, the project, the experiment, whatever it may be. Because in all due respect, we do not really have all of the answers. We don't really know what's misinformation and what's truth. For years, for decades, there have been people writing books, telling stories that weren't necessarily true. You have Richard Doty, Bill Moore, okay, who were disinformation agents. And what their protocol practically was, specifically with Richard Doty, was we're going to tell you a certain amount of truth and a little bit of fiction, and then you can go ahead and decide what you think is what, and then go from there. And that has been the case with this topic for as long as probably it's been documented. So with myself, I do not want to place my opinion or my bias, because I could be wrong. I could very well think that something that's true could end up not being true, or vice versa. And the biggest thing is just not force feeding people my opinions. And people need to think for themselves what they believe these things to be.
You know, you brought up Richard Doty and Bill Moore. And a friend of mine was at the UFO conference when Bill Moore came out and said what he was doing. And the crowd was pretty upset. Richard Doty is getting a lot of airtime, and I think it's kind of a shame. I did invite him on this show once, but I told him I wanted to talk about the Paul Benowitz case. And I said I wanted to be able to have everything on the table. I want to be able to talk about everything. And he changed his mind about coming on my show. The bottom line is he's on all these TV programs now, and there was on a Stephen Greer, no comment, movie where he's talking about actually seeing aliens in an underground bunker or something like that. I was quite shocked that they would give him the airtime. So I don't know, but that's a good point. You said exactly right. They put in a little truth mixed in there, and then go look what happened to poor Paul Benowitz. You know, I mean, basically was driven mad, you know, eventually. And not all of it was due to what Doty was doing, but it didn't help any at all. So, but I think that's really great that you seem to know a little bit about the history so early on in doing this. And one of the things I heard about the UAP task force was they were not going to look at anything prior to 2004. And I think that's terrible. And their excuse was that the equipment, the data was not good before 2004, which is, I think, kind of baloney. But what are your thoughts on that? You know, as far as, don't you think the history is important to this topic?
History is incredibly important, and I'm going to share with you my favorite quote of all time, and it's actually by Micah Hanks. And he stated, the only threat to the UAP phenomenon is not knowing the history. So yes, it is incredibly important to know as all the documented data that we can get our hands on. However, even though they're not going before 2003 or four, at least they're touching the topic. At least they're doing all of that time since. And we know that after COVID, right, during COVID, people are seeing more UFOs. But I wonder if they are saying that because there are so many smoking guns in the past that they don't want to dig up as well. And so it makes you question, why don't they want to hit before that? Is there something that they're hiding that they're not ready to tell us? But still, 2004 and onward, I think there is still a decent amount of data to cover and to share with the public, again, to just open their minds to the phenomenon and to have them ask their own questions. And then from there, when they see these little reports from the government, they're going to reach out to our podcast. They're going to read all the books they can get their hands on. They're going to go to the library. They're going to scroll. They're going to go through the internet and try to find more answers that they're simply not being provided by the government. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I don't think anytime soon we will be getting disclosure from the government. The disclosure is going to be coming from us, from putting our eyes to the skies, looking for things that we cannot explain, talking to other people that are having the same questions as us, or that might be been in the field for decades, that might have a little bit more information than we currently do. So we are the disclosure.
Yeah. Eyes to the sky is mine. You know, I have that copywritten.
I know.
but no, you're right. I think that I don't really foresee there's going to be disclosure anytime soon, quote unquote. But I do think we're in some type of forward motion like I've never seen before. But, you know, a lot of people that have been around for decades and decades are saying, well, we've been here before. And, you know, it only leads to disappointment, you know, that type of thing.
In some respects, but then it makes you question, what does disclosure mean? What does it really, really mean?
Yeah.
And I think everyone has their own perspective on what disclosure means. Some thinks it means the government's going to admit the word aliens, that aliens are here. And then you have some that are going to say, well, it's going to be a mass sighting. Then you have some that are going to say, well, maybe the government is going to place all of their documents and make it declassified. And so everyone kind of has their own understanding of what disclosure means. It's a very vague term, yet it's a very weighted word as well. But I think in the long run, regardless of how you define the word disclosure, the underlining behind it is to know the truth. To know the truth, are we being visited or not? Are they already here? What are they? What are they doing?
Yeah, speaking of that, do you think the government knows any more than we know?
That's a good question. That's a really, really good question. In some respects, I think obviously I want to say yes, but in other respects, you know, everything is decompartmentalized in the government. And the biggest thing is I can suspect someone knows the answer, but if they would come out with that information, I doubt it. And now with the government constantly contracting private organizations, it seems like maybe private companies might have more information than the government does. So kind of pointing our pitchforks at the government saying, give us disclosure. Yes, we need to constantly push for that transparency to the best of our ability, but that doesn't mean that they'll have all of the answers that we're looking for.
Right. So this is the question that I basically just more or less asked. Thank you for that. And you're right about the private, you know, the private, like the black money and the private companies and things like that. I remember I had Chris Mellon on my show. He was, I was the first one to interview him. And by the way, he may be on, Gary Nolan is definitely coming on March 15, and Chris Mellon tentatively is coming on if he's not traveling at that time. So that'll be a great show. But anyway, he was saying that is the way that you keep it, you know, hidden under lock and key, is you get it into the private sector. And he said, because if any president along the line says that they want to know, are there aliens or what are UFOs, that they have to tell the president whatever it is that they know. And the only way to stop that from happening is to put it in the private hands. And then it's exempt from that. So I appreciate the questions. Yes, there will be phone-in questions later on. So if you would like to ask our guest a question on chat, just put it in all caps. And we have quite a few people. There's a lot of activity in there.
Well, we know, while we're on the topic, we know UFOs are real because they are unidentified. Is it aliens? I don't know. I want to know. And I wonder if they've been here for a long time. You know, are they deep in the oceans observing our development? I don't know. But when I interviewed Ross Coldheart, he said that a private contracting company on the West Coast is monitoring these exact things. And it makes me question, what company is it?
In the ocean?
Seems like it, yes.
Wow.
It was very vague the way he said it, but to my understanding, that is what he meant. So what we're getting at is there are people, specifically private companies, that are looking into this. Now, when it's private, we know that the public will not be getting that information.
Right, right. Is this a question? Okay, questions are kept. No, sorry about that. Now, the USOs, that's another topic all by itself. It's really fascinating. Now, I remember your buddy Jimmy Church had this thing about the Malibu, the anomaly off Malibu. And that ended up being a rock formation. I'm wondering if that's all completely solved. Has he ever talked about that when you two were together?
Not to my knowledge. When it comes to USOs, which is, I think, such a great topic, someone that's very knowledgeable in it is Preston Dennett. But what we understand is that, yes, they're unidentified submerged objects, but in reality, they're still transmedium objects that can travel through the water, through the air, and through space. So even though it has its own title as a USO, in many respects, it's still just a regular kind of UFO, because it seems that a lot of these craft that we see, a great example is a Tic Tac, that it can travel through air and water in an instance with no issues. And there have been a few television shows that kind of ask the question, and we've even had some renowned researchers in the UFO field ask, could they be AI drones, but manufactured by non-human intelligence? Because if we look at Tic Tacs or the speed that they go at, the maneuvers that they make, it would be impossible to our current understanding as humans. It would be impossible for anyone to survive in that.
Oh, yeah.
So it makes you question, could they simply be AI drones? Because here's a good example. We are right now discovering our solar system. As we speak, NASA is constantly sending drones, okay? Rovers. The Perseverance rover just hit Mars. Obviously, people were not sent first. They sent AI technology to go ahead and sniff out what's going on, understand the composition of the atmosphere, things of that nature, because that is safer, because that is logical to do before you send a living being in. What if these craft that we're seeing in the sky are doing the exact same thing? What if they are just merely controlled by entities of not of terrestrial origin, but that they're AI drones with no living beings inside of them? That would just simply make sense.
Mm-hmm. The one thing about, in in particular about the Tic Tac, though, is that we don't have any technology that could take that G-force. And not only a being, but any type of missile or anything that we've ever created right. with that type of G-force would completely shatter, fall apart, not work. So, yeah, that one is a real big mystery. So I have a question for you. How does someone like you that is interested in this topic, jumping into this topic, how do you avoid going down the rabbit hole and getting involved in, say, thinking certain UFO, unnamed UFO channels, all their stuff is real? How did you keep yourself from going the wrong place? Or did you go? I did a little bit in the beginning, you know, but luckily I had people around that would help me. So what was that experience like?
Well, what I'm saying here and what I'm suggesting is, and things that I muse about often, but I'm not opinionated. I just want the answers. And I do go down those rabbit holes. I analyze the information. I look for the facts. I look for the data. That's the biggest thing. When people tell stories or when people say, well, it's written here, I go ahead and I look for that information for things that have been documented, because there are a lot of anecdotal accounts. There's a lot of alleged accounts. But if there isn't anything to back it up, it can be a lot more difficult to go ahead and agree with it. But I don't subscribe belief, especially to anecdotal narratives. I stay on the fence. Always. I stay balanced to the best of my ability, but you can't avoid jumping into a rabbit hole. It's impossible.
That's right. Hang on just one second here.
Absolutely.
So there's this question here. Are you maybe? Yeah. Okay. Down a little bit. Sorry. My camera's going out of focus. They're right there. It's perfect. Thank you. Not AI drones, but laser plasma filaments projected up to 50 kilometers. Are you familiar with this topic, what this person put in there, Michael put in there?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
It's interesting. Yeah. Thank you for that, Michael. I'm not really sure about that. Now, what about this question here?
Something that I'll look into when it comes to Michael. I'll look into that.
Yeah. So how do you feel young people would react to real contact?
I think they would just shrug their shoulders like, cool. All right. Take me take me over. I'm fine. That's honestly how I think it would go. And I would be on the same boat. If I saw a craft come down, I would hijack it, kick the people out, the entities out, and then just travel the galaxy without a sense of like a sprinkle of guilt or anything. I'd be like, yes, this craft is mine. But when it comes to my generation and open contact, I don't think it'll be a question. I think many people, from my understanding at least, I think many people are expecting it at some point in time, either in their lifetime or their children's lifetime. So it's not really a stretch of any kind. Now, how would society change as a whole? That is something that I simply cannot answer. But as for my generation, just because I have a very similar mindset as many of them do, it would just be another day.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, there used to be, I remember hearing, as long as I've been looking at this topic, that, you know, the world would basically go into major turmoil, all the stock market would crash, the religions would all have, you know, traumatic, whatever it is that would ever happen with them. I don't know what people were suggesting would happen. But basically, society would fall apart. I don't think that's the case anymore. And I think part of it is we are, some people are calling this a soft disclosure. You know, we are being acclimated a little bit to the possibilities. We have so much going on right now. James Webb Telescope just launched recently. We can be optimistic about what might happen with that. And then, you know, when the Kepler went up, we started realizing that there are some possibility of Earth-like, you know, planets out there. And so I think we would certainly I don't think it's going to fall apart. I'm very interested to know exactly what would happen. You know, would it be, like you said, would it be kind of old news quickly? I hope not, because it's pretty major in my opinion.
Oh, it is. But, you know, it's coming. The kids are primed and ready. And it makes sense that with all the planets being discovered and all the TV shows, movies, etc., I think it would be well accepted. Now, that's if it was friendly first contact. But if it was something dark and bad, right, like awful afoot, then, well, we would come together as a species. We would finally realize that we are one species.
I would hope so. I would hope so. I know President Ronald Reagan used to say that many times. He said that many times. If we are ever attacked from space, we would all join together. Something I'm paraphrasing, not sure exactly what he said, something like that. So how do you see the future of this topic in mainstream academic research? Will it gain prestige? Greetings from Singapore. Thank you. I'd like to say your first name, but I would butcher it, but thank you for that, from Singapore.
So when it comes to the mainstream media and the academic research behind it, I think it will come in time. You have the Galileo Project run by Harvard professor Avi Loeb. And I think he is going to be a great primer to go ahead and bring more scientists into the subject and not have this feeling of being ridiculed or feeling ashamed. We know that for scientists to go ahead and conduct research or conduct data, you need to be funded. And the people that fund you need to agree with your vision. So scientists are very cautious on the things that they want to research, because if they don't have the funding, that can't happen. Or they could very well just kind of be pushed aside, be ridiculed, and then never kind of have those credentials that they had prior to go ahead and explaining, yes, I want to study aliens. Like, absolutely. It can make it look a little crazy. Avi Loeb has taken a great aspect to it where he's saying, look, I just want the data. The data doesn't lie. That's what I want. Nothing more, nothing less. So with him being very public about it, he is going to go ahead and start more scientists coming through and searching for extraterrestrial life, but in a more scientific manner than just going on plain faith or just anecdotal accounts. So yeah. I think when it comes to the mainstream media academic research, it will come in time, and hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah, I think, you know, just one person, Kevin Knuth, was on a number of people that are involved in the SCU, which is the Scientific Coalition for UAP Studies, I believe. Anyway, so these are scientists that started before Avi Loeb, but as well as, you know, there are many that are getting involved with Avi as well, with that whole Galileo project. I think it's a wonderful step in the right direction. And you're right, it's really hard to, you know, to get the funding and for people to take you serious, but a lot more people are taking it serious now. The reason I brought up Kevin Knuth is because he said he wanted to be in on the ground floor to the greatest discovery of mankind. And so that's why he's putting his neck out there. We'll be right back right after this music break. Hello and welcome back. And I'm not sure what the heck happened to my camera. It just, there it is, I think. There it goes. Woof. I'm back. I don't know what that was about. But anyway, thank you for watching our show tonight, listening to our show. We have Christina Gomez, and I'm going to bring her right back in. Hello, hello.
Hey there.
So I can't remember the topic we were on when we were I saw a question, and that was someone wanted to know if you had your own UFO sighting. Have you ever had one?
I have.
Oh, dear. Get into it.
It's not one that I've actually talked about often. It's when I think about it, I still kind of clam up. So please forgive me if I stutter a little bit here and there. But pretty much a few years back, while on a vacation field trip, I was with a small group of people, and we went to India for a few days to go visit some ancient ruins. And it was a very, very private deal. It wasn't a commercial package or anything. And we just had this really spontaneous idea to see this one temple in particular. So we're walking through the streets, and we see this sadhu, this holy man. And we said, hey, you know, do you know where this temple is? And he says, you know what? I'll take you. I'll go ahead and I'll take you there. And I said, yeah, okay. Well, what can go wrong? Some stranger taking us to a random place in a foreign land? Not a problem. Everything's going to be fine. So we travel by bus like a few miles, and then we walk the rest of the way. And we get to this, it was a Shivan temple. And when we got there, we kind of roamed around, and then we kind of just sat there the rest of the day. And the holy man, the guru, the sadhu said, you can go ahead, you know, lay on the grass, look at the clouds, meditate, do whatever you like, and just wait until later in the evening. So we're like, okay, no problem. A lot of the people I was with started meditating and stuff, but I kind of just like went ahead and just enjoyed looking at the clouds, you know, like a child when you see all these different figures and you're like, well, that one looks like a dragon eating a lollipop. And that one looks like, so I was really enjoying myself because I was still rather young. And as it got darker outside, right, the holy man said, okay, for those that are meditating, go ahead and open your eyes and look up in the sky. Okay, just look up in the sky. And then he goes into a very deep meditation at this time. When this happens, we're like, okay, well, this guy's in a meditation. It's not all right, whatever. And then all of a sudden, I hear this person next to me, oh my God, what is that? And we all look up. We're like, what are you looking at? What is it? And we saw these three, because it was rather far away, we saw like these three kind of orange yellow glowing orbs. And one of them just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger because it was getting closer to us. And it got pretty close. You could kind of see, in a sense, what it looked like. And I don't know if you've seen the Carlos Diaz lights, but it was if I had to compare it to something, it would be similar to that. Like, it didn't look fully nuts and bolts. It looked kind of organic. It was glowing in like orange and yellow and a little bit of red. And it's actually really hard to explain, but it just wasn't fully metallic and it wasn't fully organic. It was kind of a mixture of the two. And so it's only happened for a few seconds. Like, this was not a long enough period of time to pull out your phone, your camera, and snap a picture, record it. For those that have had UFO sightings for the first time, you're just in shock. You're just like, and your brain does not even process to go ahead and take a picture to estimate the size and be like, if I compare it to that light stand, it has to be about 200 meters in length. Like, obviously these things do not cross your mind. You're just in pure shock because it's something that is not explainable from your past experiences or from anything that you have seen prior, right? So your brain is just trying to understand,
yeah,
what the heck am I seeing?
Yeah.
So with that, if it really activated my interest after that. But what ended up happening after all of this was the craft ended up leaving, and it went with this other two orbs, and it just disappeared really fast. And then the sadhu got out of meditation And this is kind of where it sounds really woo-woo right here. But he goes ahead and he says, and I'm paraphrasing here, he practically says, the thing that you saw, it's very similar to us. You can practically call it family. And at that time, we're all like talking amongst ourselves. We're like, what the heck did we just see? Like, what's going on? But we also had promised, the whole group had promised that we wouldn't really talk about it, just because it's as you can tell, you're like, what is this girl saying? It's so difficult to explain. And no matter how well I explain it, you wouldn't get it unless you were there. So it's not something that I talk about often because it's very difficult to do so. But that wasn't the reason to why I started my YouTube channel. In all reality, it was a memory that I kind of suppressed and I put in the back of my mind that I didn't really consider the years following up to talking about this publicly. But as the channel started and things of and I started talking to more people, that's when that memory began to arise once again. And I'm like, oh yeah, he did have that sighting. Oh my gosh, that was really profound. But it activated my interest afterwards, after I had already started the channel. And overall, it really opened my mind to all the possibilities of what it could have been and what it could not be at the same time, just because looking at the Carlos Diaz lights, the only story so far that I have found being similar, it also led me to look at so many other cases to go ahead and find something that was similar to what I had seen.
Yeah. How about that? Now I'm going to ask you this. What if that guy was right? Have you ever thought
of that? What guy?
The one who said it might be like more like us than you know.
It, you know what? I'm so open-minded to the possibility that I wouldn't be surprised. There are so many theories on what these entities would be, could be, what these craft could be. Some say it's us from the future. Some say it's it could be something just in our galaxy. Some say it's an extra dimensional. And then you have those that could say, well, maybe it's a broken off civilization. There are so many theories. There are so many sightings. People that have gotten close to these entities describe them differently as if they are different races, that it would be really hard to say, to place all of my eggs in one basket and state that, like, yes, every single one of them is closer to us than we could ever imagine. I feel like, just in the same sense that we have so many different cars, we have trucks, we have those cars that like plow the snow. I don't know what those are called. We have 18-wheelers, plow trucks. Thank you. they all have different jobs. They all do different things. Some of them take diesel, some of them take gasoline. And we simply cannot place all of those things in the exact same category, doing the exact same thing, run by the exact same people or entities.
Right.
So it would be hard to say that the things that we're seeing in the sky or in the oceans, all of them are closer to us than we know. Yeah. I couldn't say yes or no to that.
No, you know, basically what I was getting at is kind of what you just said, is like, to me, one theory is almost as good as all the others, because there are, you know, with all the shows I've done on this, I've heard countless ideas, and they're most of them are very fascinating to me. And it's kind of what keeps me going too. I really like the thought of that. I think you more or less answered this in a way, but is this phenomenon a big deal with your generation? How important is it to your generation? Is it even talked about? Like, if you know, you mentioned being in high school, you didn't know when the New York Times article came out. But was the topic of UFOs or possible extraterrestrial visitations or extraterrestrial life in general, you know, kind of a topic or not?
It is. And a really good example is actually last semester in my college courses, four times UFOs came up. in my assignments, in my actual assignments. One of them being in my geology class, bringing up extraterrestrial life on Mars and stating how would they, if they came to Earth, how would they go ahead and react to a different atmosphere? And then I also had it in my philosophy class as well, which came up twice in two different assignments, talking about how would you react if you went ahead and interacted with a being not from this Earth. And there were a few other examples as well that are kind of escaping me at this moment, but it seems like it's becoming a more mainstream topic to go ahead and converse about, to even just consider and allow your imagination to run. Now, when it comes to my generation and bringing in the science, the politics, the history in it, maybe not as much yet, but I think the first step and the biggest step is just having the conversation and then going from there. And then having that, once that mind is open, once someone asks that first question, the ball starts rolling. And then from there, these people can go ahead and do their own research, see what aspect they like that they want to go ahead and do more research on. Because with the UFO phenomenon, there are so many paths you can take. You can take just the science path, the history path, the spiritual path, so on and so forth. There are so many that you can go to, but they're all going to take you at the same destination. They're so going to make you ask you the question, what's the truth? What is going to happen? But, you know, when talking about all of this and having my channel and talking to people about it, either in person or like we're doing here, one of my biggest challenges is having battled verbal dyslexia. Now, for those that don't know what that is, it's very similar to regular dyslexia, like when you're reading, but my brain, it will think something and then my words will say something completely different. And so what to me makes perfect sense, I'm like, yes, I'm going to talk about, for example, elephants. Okay. Like elephants are great, but then my words will come out and they'll say like eggplant or something. And I'm thinking that doesn't make literally any sense, but I can't catch it. Other people can. And they're like, what the heck is she saying? So when I grew up, on top of that, was I had a really awful stutter and I wasn't always able to properly communicate my thoughts clearly, and a sentence wouldn't come out all jumbled up. And so doing my channel, doing the shows, and this has kind of in a sense been a therapy for me, and I challenge myself over and over again to do so. So when everything looks all dandy and great in the inside, behind the scenes, all of us have our struggles. All of us have our own little battles that we need to go ahead and release and go ahead and fix them. And I don't know, I wanted to bring that up to you. It's not something that I bring up very often, but it's been a really big struggle. And when I get really nervous, I'll talk really fast and then I'll stutter and then I'll get really embarrassed and I'll just stop talking.
Oh, poor thing. Well, you know what? You're doing really wonderful and good for you to face whatever it is to work through that. That's really great.
Thank you.
That's inspiring, and maybe inspire other people that hear that too. I love this question, Dave Allen. What's the first question Christina would ask if she met an alien? I'd like to answer that myself too. So go ahead.
Well, I would ask if they had ramen noodles and vanilla ice cream. And if they did, I would classify them as being intelligent.
That's close enough. Yeah.
But in all seriousness, to be serious, I would ask, do you know if there's a continuum of consciousness after bodily death, or do you know if there is a supreme being that created everything? And that would be what I would want to know now, because I'm so fascinated by those mysteries, not just UFOs.
Well, I think that those are really great. And if the question was asked of me, David, if I may, I would like to ask, what is the question that I should ask? Because they would know.
Oh, but they would also assume, based off of your perceived intelligence that maybe the question that they might want you to ask might be ready for you at that moment.
Yeah, that probably would not understand a single thing. Lee Spiegel just put in a question to you. What would you like to see the UFOs turn out to be? Do you have a preference?
No, I don't have a preference. I think all of them are exciting. I, the biggest thing is to understand their knowledge. That regardless of what they are, that would be complete discrimination, right? That would be rude to be like, well, I want them to be ramen lovers that look like
vanilla ice cream.
Exactly. Yeah. So I haven't even considered that. But I think that the universe is teeming with life, and all of these beings can look different. Ones that we can possibly expect that could look somewhat humanoid, and ones that we couldn't even imagine what they would look like until after we see it. So, yeah. But you know, if these beings do come to Earth, right, and they do have contact, if they were super advanced, could they help us defeat cancer? Could they teach us how to not destroy ourselves? And what is our place as a species in the universe?
Are we that consequential? You know, but we are to our own planet. How much we're affecting out there, I have no idea. Going back to your sighting, the other people that saw, this is from Michael, the other people that saw the whatever it is you saw in the sky, did they say that they saw the same thing in the same way? That's a really good question, but I want to hear your answer. Did you ask them, did they see the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. It's something that we talked about amongst ourselves, but didn't really talk about to other people that didn't see it. But yes, they did, but you know, everyone was kind of embarrassed. I mean, like there was a shock in the group. A total shock to like, what the heck did we see? And none of us at the time were interested in the topic, right? So it kind of just like led at that time the sense of embarrassment. But to my understanding, when we had all spoken about it, we all did see the same thing.
There's the reason I think that's a good question is because there are many times where people that I've talked to where other people that witnessed the exact thing at the same time saw something else, which I think is another fascinating thing. And you were describing exactly what I was feeling when I had my UFO sighting. Like, what is my brain seeing? What is that? You know, mine wasn't spectacular in any type of way, but it was like, it didn't fit. I wasn't ready for that. And if I had a cell phone right next to me, I wouldn't have thought to pick it up, to take a picture or video it. Never would have thought.
I totally get what you mean. I mean, obviously we share the same kind of story, and with those groups of with that group of people I was with, we didn't really dive deep into it. You know, we all kind of agreed not to talk about it again. It was a really strange situation, and it still sounds kind of crazy to me because I haven't processed it yet. It's one of those things that it's very difficult to go ahead and be like, I know exactly what that was. It's difficult to process.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you can always say, I saw something. I have no idea what it was. You know, I mean, that's basically what I saw. You know, my thing that I was saying is that there's no way it was something we had, you know, I mean, with the characteristics and the look of it and the way it moved. This question, I have no idea if you look at other people's YouTube channels, but Ivan0135, do you check out other people's channels? I guess that's what the question is.
I haven't seen that one, no.
Yeah.
But I'll look at it.
Yeah. Is that something you do? Do you see what other people are doing? And if so, are you aware of the channels that you have to stay away from? Has anyone helped you with that?
What do you mean by that?
There are some that are just doing it for click and money, for the views and money. There's a couple channels out there that are making a lot of money, and they're doing it by hoaxing videos.
for anyone that invites me to their channel and wants to have this conversation, for the most part, I will go ahead and approach their channel and talk about this. And for those that might feel like their channel might be a hoax or they're not feeling too good about it, what I want to do is just bring this conversation to more people, regardless of who it is, regardless of their mindsets, their bias, their opinions. Just having this conversation, asking that one question, can change someone's perspective for the rest of their lives. So there hasn't been a moment, there hasn't been any times where someone has said, oh, don't go to that channel. And if they did, they never invited me over.
What I meant by that is they're getting a lot of traffic because they're posting, they're posting hoax videos. So they're getting a lot of traffic. They're making a lot of money and they're doing it as a business. And some of them are very spectacular CGI.
Well, and then in that case, yeah, I steer clear of that because I know that there are a handful of clickbait channels and I don't watch their stuff, but I am open to talking to anyone really, unless they are trolls or unless they're hostile. But it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Luis is saying hi. The unidentified celebrity review.
Hey there. Oh, yeah. And by the way, for the person that asked about that specific channel, and I lost it.
Yeah.
It says here, I just went ahead and looked. It's the ruins of ancient Shiva worship temples. Oh, okay.
So it's an ancient, I see. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I haven't looked into it, but I will. I'll look. I have it opened now.
What was the particular temple where you had your sighting?
It isn't one that's documented. It was just a Shiva temple. Yeah. And it was like, it was in ruins. I mean, it was a very, very, very old temple.
Yeah. And so I guess that leads me to the thought of ancient aliens. You know, I mean, I think that the show, there's a lot of stuff that really reaches out there. And I think I've only watched two episodes. So I can't really judge it too well, but I know that when I was watching and I thought, well, that's kind of a stretch. This is kind of a stretch, but my own personal thoughts is it's possible that we could have always been visited. But what are your thoughts on that?
That was one of the very first alien TV shows that kind of went mainstream. It was one of the first shows that made people think outside of the box. Now, while we might not all agree to their, I guess, sometimes outlandish explanations or theories, that show altogether is to bring this profound topic to the mainstream, to make them think and to ask questions. Because ancient aliens, they give you all these theories, but that doesn't mean that they actually have the answers. They're just kind of saying, well, I think this based off of this, which is what we're doing here today. We're just kind of assuming, we're kind of guessing, we're kind of doing estimations. And I mean, there is a lot of big stretches. And I think I like how it has such longevity and it stimulates people's minds. I mean, as a trigger, it exposes people to these concepts and gets people to ask the questions. So overall, I'm rather pleased with what they've done with the audience that they have gained from it, the traction as well.
Yeah, I agree in that way that it's definitely made people be more open to the topic overall. Someone that may have kind of fallen in or may have a history type, you know, passion that might watch it just to see the old, you know, the old ruins or whatever it is they're exploring there. And so I agree that it has open up some eyes. The phone line is open. If you'd like to call in, that's 855-472-5483. And Bill is standing by. So if you'd like to call in with a question for our guest tonight, do call in. We have several lines available. So have you ever been on a show when someone's called in?
I have.
Oh, you have. So like you're once. Wow. You're a pro.
No, but for the time being, James asks, do you think Bigfoot are connected to UFOs? And I just want to say I am looking into that and I will do a show on that on the future because it's a fascinating concept to think about. Are they? Because there are so many stories. Well, there are not so many, but there are quite a few stories where people have seen a UFO sighting and then a Bigfoot sighting, like back to back, or sometimes at the exact same time when they're looking in one direction. So it's one that I think about and looking forward to doing a show on in the near future.
Yes, I actually have, can you believe it? I have two shows that involve that. And one is with Alan Mergagel, and that's coming up February 1st. He's a he is a filmmaker, wrote a movie in particular about that. And then I have Stan Gordon all the way at the end of March, who did some research into that a long time ago. Speaking of upcoming guests, next week is pretty exciting. I have, and I want to pronounce this, Monroe Neville. Monroe Neville is one of the people that was involved in Rendlesham Forest. He's never talked about it. He's talked about it, I think, on one other show. And he's ready to talk about it, and he says he's not going to hold back with anything. So he'll be on next week here at the same time, as always. So that'll be interesting.
That is exciting.
I don't know how much you've looked into the Rendlesham Forest, but it's such a convoluted case with the different people, the infighting in between them all, and some things that didn't make sense. I'm interested to see, you know, what that show is going to be like. It should be good. I hope the guy can get on the internet. It might be just a telephone interview. I'm trying to find that out at this point. So anyway, the lines are open, and there's something wrong with the private chat because it's not showing up like it's supposed to. We actually do have a caller. And we have Hector from Puerto Rico. Hector, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Welcome. You have a question for our guest tonight?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I have a question for Christina.
Okay.
Okay,
what
Christina.
Is it?
My first question is, what will be your reaction if there is a extraterrestrial presence here on Earth?
I'm sorry, you broke up. Can you repeat that question?
Okay. What will be your reaction if you know, or everybody knows, that there's a extraterrestrial presence here on Earth?
Oh, okay. So what will my reaction be if we knew there was an extraterrestrial presence on Earth? Well, I would be very open to it. And in a sense, I would kind of expect it. I mean, it makes sense that they could be here.
Okay. So we're having a little bit of feedback. Hector, anything follow up on that?
Yeah. My other question is, if she is following any particular extraterrestrial case, UFO case in particular?
Any particular UFO pages, like articles?
I thought he said cases.
Oh, cases. So when it comes to cases, there are quite a few that I really enjoy that I have done a bit of research on. One of them is the one in Colares, Brazil. Now, I don't know if that is necessarily a true story, as a lot of alleged accounts, like several thousand witnesses as well. It's rather insane. But that one at this current time is my favorite story. And kind of to go back to your first question, which both of these kind of coexist, which is, When we go out into the stars, we will be watching other species on other worlds. So it wouldn't boggle my mind if that's already happening. For example, with the Colares event that happened in Brazil in the 1970s, 1980s. In that story in particular, you're having multiple different craft during 6 months going ahead and terrorizing the town folk in Colares, Brazil. So it's some of these stories, I think, would just make it wouldn't make me question if it's not possible. I believe that us being visited by extraterrestrials is very possible.
Well, is that the case where the guy was burned? Am I thinking of the right one? One of the people were burned.
There were a few people. Yes. And they also got like puncture wounds as well by the lights. They had like these kinds of needles in a sense, where it went ahead and punctured the women in the chest and the men in the jugular area. So there were multiple people burned over a period of time, over 6 months. And it's a really fascinating story. It's a totally a sci-fi movie story. And for several thousand people, they classified it as being true. Like it really did happen. It really did terrorize a small fishing town.
Right. Yes. So we, Stephen, I guess just hung up. We do have the line open if someone would like to call in. So what are some of the other ones that, I mean, I have my favorites. I can't help it. But what are some of the other ones that you really think are fascinating? You mentioned the Tic Tac. Is that one of them?
The Tic Tac is definitely one, just because it has been recorded by government cameras. And I think that's a really big deal for a lot of people. But the Clarus by far is my favorite. And then I think one that I just really enjoy musing about, one that just it really just like kind of makes me smile in a sense, is the one at the Holloman Air Force Base where President Eisenhower had a meeting with UFOs, like with a certain kind of entity. And even though we do not know if that's true, these are just simply alleged accounts of certain military officials that said, well, President Eisenhower did enter a craft when we were flying the plane. There was a craft above the airplane when entering into the Holloman Air Force Base. And that one, I just find so exciting. Like it just makes me smile thinking like, oh my gosh, a US president could be in contact with aliens. What happens next? But again, you know, these are merely alleged accounts. We do not know if that actually happened or not, but it opens the door to asking questions, to being curious. And in all of this, the biggest thing is that I'm still learning and I'm still reading up on the history. And there are so many cases to go through and even recent sightings. So what I like is constantly changing after each book I read, after every encounter I read, just because there's so much to go through. But what about you? Which one's your favorite?
I've decided over the last, I don't know, maybe just the last year, that I think it's the Ariel School incident, which I just think is fascinating because of, and the school children sightings to me is fascinating. And I think there's really something to that, more than just that this thing just happened to go in a schoolyard, because of so many times this has happened. Westall, and I know you mentioned Preston Dennett earlier. He did a book and I think he said there was like 110 or 120 schoolyard sightings. And I've interviewed two people that have never talked about it before. One of them was in Oakland, and one I had an entire show on, Deb Coyle, still one of my favorite shows in the last year, was with her because it was so heartfelt and was the first time she ever spoke about it. Wow. So I love those type of shows, talking to people that are talking about it for the first time. So as far as the ones that are really widely known, I would have to say the Ariel School. I have like a top five, and these are just my own preference. It means nothing. The Tic Tac, you know, that whole event, that's in the five. The Phoenix Lights is in the five. Rendlesham Forest is in the five. And did I go six yet? But no, I think I did about four or five. But anyway, those are all what I think are very, very fascinating. Now, I'd like to look a little bit more into the Brazil one, because that I do remember, I haven't looked deeply into that, but you really think there's something to it. As far as Eisenhower, I don't know. I think that's kind of a fable, but it's so hard to know.
It could very well be. Yeah. You know, we don't know. And that's the whole thing with this UFO phenomenon altogether. It's difficult to decipher what's a hoax, what's a fable, and what's not. It's not an easy feat, but again, it's just having these conversations, just to even consider it, that opens the door to so many more questions. Right. And in some respects, to go ahead and push forward. just to hopefully get those answers.
Yeah. Lee Spiegel just mentioned the Larry Coyne case, which is a helicopter case. That's a heck of a case for anyone that wants to do a little Googling on that. Coyne, I believe, is C-O-Y-N-E, I believe. We have another caller, and that's Leilani from California. Leilani, welcome to the show. Hello. You're live on the air, Leilani. Are you there? I guess you there, Leilani? Last call. Okay. Maybe she'll be back. Maybe she won't. The Larry Coyne case was really quite amazing. I don't know if you've ever heard about it, but I think it was in the 70s at some point. And a military helicopter, I think there was five or six, maybe more people, and it raised up, I think, like 1,000 feet instantly above toward this object that was above them. So 1973 is when that happened. But yeah, that's a real fascinating case. And that was military. There's a lot of military interaction one way or the other. All right, we're going to try one more time. And let's give it another try. Leilani, are you there? Hello? I guess it's we're having trouble with the sound, apparently, when it comes through the Bill, I don't know if you can fix anything with that, but we're going to have to move on, unfortunately. So, yeah, it doesn't mean that cases that I like have any more credence than other ones. You know, it's just that I personally find those fascinating, especially the Ariel School. And I get at least an email a week, people asking me when that movie is coming out, the Ariel Phenomenon, and I don't know. I know it's going to be on a major streaming platform. It was supposed to be out before the end of the year. Now I have my update is sometime the first part of this year. Let's try it again with a different caller, see if this works. Ken, you are live on the air. Welcome to the show. Yeah, we're having audio. Oh. There we go. Ken, you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yeah, I'd like to just say one thing.
Okay.
About
it fixed. Items,
you know? We know, right? I've heard Lou Elizondo talk about reading documents that were written in Latin of soldiers discussing seeing these luminous objects in the sky. And, you know, our history is filled with sailors seeing underwater lights. You know, we know the Russians have encountered fleets of USOs underwater. There are literally thousands of videos and reports of UFOs entering and exiting our oceans, entering and exiting our volcanoes, entering and exiting our deepest lakes, right? Why wouldn't you think that there's already a presence on this earth? The evidence is there. And this idea that like we don't know what it is, or we can't say that, you know, for sure what it is, but we know it's something. I mean, we know for sure that it's not like Minnie Mouse, you know, in those crafts. When I see a plane or a helicopter, right, in the sky, I intuitively know that there is somebody in there, or if it's a drone, then someone built it. So when I see these crafts that are doing these moves that we don't know how to do, we don't have the technology to do it, right? And then there's all of these anecdotal stories about these advanced beings. So why couldn't you accept the idea that there are these advanced beings that already live in our oceans and have lived in our oceans for thousands, if not millions of years?
Well, first off, Ken, I want to say you have a radio voice. So amazing. Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't have the evidence. We have lots of cases and reports and anecdotal tales, but do I have the evidence? No, I am open-minded to them being here under the oceans, but still, I think we really need the objects in our hands or to have public contact with these things. And for the majority of the public, they don't know about that. So let's get the data out there. That's the biggest thing.
Well, do you think that those videos that the military released are fake or doctored? How is that not evidence?
It's still rather new for a lot of people. A lot of people haven't even seen these videos. But, you know, you have a point, Ken. Don't get me wrong. You do have a point. But I still think we need even more evidence from that. Because, yes, we have the Tic Tac, the Go Fast, the gimbal. But then people are still going to complain, oh, well, it's blurry. Oh, well, it's not good enough. And, again, I am open-minded to them being non-human intelligence. But has the world changed? Has there been contact? Not yet.
Yeah, but Christina, we know, right, that the majority of people on planet Earth are idiots, all right? And if you just go back to Copernicus, go back to Galileo, right? These people, when they were trying to tell the rest of the world that the Earth was not the center of our solar system, they were ridiculed, right? One person was trying to tell everyone else the fact, or J. Harlan Brent with his Missoula flood theory, right? All these other people disagreed with him, but when they were presenting facts, but yet all of these idiots, right? The majority of humans are idiots. They're stupid.
Okay, all right.
Of people, yeah. That actually speak the truth. So why would you rely on all the idiots in the world?
All right. Okay. Ken, since you have such a great voice, I'm looking forward to your own show when you start it.
Oh, I have a channel. It's called UFO Video Addicts.
And there you go.
I've been doing these videos for 2.5 years, so that's why I know. I don't believe. I know that we are not alone on this planet.
Yes, thank you, Ken.
I've been making videos about it.
Yeah. All right, Ken. We have some people lined up on the phone. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Leilani, I want to apologize for you. Thank you for coming back. And I forget, you're from California as well. Welcome to the show.
I am. Thank you. I had it muted, so I don't know what you guys have been talking about. I didn't want any feedback. But I just want to say thank you for both of you to talk about this because, Christina, you're refreshing. The fact that you're young and so smart and so open-minded is, reassuring to me. I'm an older generation. And Martin, I apologize. This is only the second show of yours that I've watched. I'm not even really familiar.
You're forgiven. Yes.
I don't hate to admit that out loud, but my background is environmental science and completely very logic minded until 4 years ago. Yeah, exactly. 4 years ago, I started opening up and found out that I have an ability to communicate and I don't even know how to explain this. Kind of like when Christina was relating her story about India and her encounter, I can communicate with multidimensional beings and communicate actually telepathically with ETs. I know, I just said that out loud. But anyway, it's reassuring to me that we're able to communicate and talk about this more openly. And 4 years ago was that encounter. I was told 3 years ago that within 3 years, there will be very few people on this earth who would not believe in UFOs. And I'm watching this over the 3 years unfold right before my very eyes. And my personal experience when I was younger, I remember when the movie Fire in the Sky came out with Travis Walton. And I went to the movie, I saw it with my friends and thought, oh, that's a good movie. Didn't think much of it, just thought it was Hollywood. And now I'm seeing Travis come out and be more open about his experience and what happened to him and relay to us first person that it was a movie. It was created for Hollywood and excitement and entertainment. And to actually hear him give his own version And also in my research in the last 4 years, because I had to get up to speed, I didn't even know anything about UFOs or ETs, or, you know, I thought, oh, you know, as a scientist, it's impossible for us to be on this planet all by ourselves. Or it's arrogant to think that we are the only species, right? And now through personal experience, I'm trying to catch up. So I don't know anything about all these things, these people that you guys have mentioned, these encounters. And so I have a fresh perspective. And that's what I find so exciting about Christina. So anyway.
May I ask you a question, Leilani?
Sure.
How are you sure whatever it is you're communicating, I mean, as a scientist, how are you sure whatever it is you're communicating with is what you think they are, what you're stating here?
I know. That's a very good question. As a scientist, I want to know the truth, and I research everything. But when it's happening to you personally, there's just, how do I explain? You know what you know, and you know what you're experiencing. And until you're in that person's shoes, it's going to sound crazy and cuckoo. And how do I know that it is extraterrestrial?
Yes.
Because they told me. And because I know that this information is not coming from me. It's not something. I had no experience with ETs. I had no experience with UFOs. I wasn't excited about it, as a lot of your viewers are, or your listeners are. My only association with it was Carl Sagan. Like, I love Carl Sagan. And he had a lot to teach me. But other than that, no. I wouldn't call myself a ufologist. In fact, I'm still not, I don't know how to explain it, a fan. I just know what I've experienced. And so I try to be open-minded. And again, so I just want to say thank you to both of you for doing this podcast. And I look forward to hearing more from Christina and from you, Martin, as well. But question, I don't even know, but I guess for both of you, this is a question. Have you thought that the ETs are already communicating with us, and put those thoughts in our heads to say, oh, look up now and you'll see me, or go to this temple in India and knowing ahead of time that you're going to have that encounter, you're going to have that experience, to then start a show or a podcast or a YouTube channel to start talking about it so that more and more people hear about your experience? Have you thought of that?
That's a good question, Leilani. And first off, thank you so much for opening up about what you can do. And just to touch on that, you know, I don't have that ability. That'd be pretty awesome if I did. But, you know, I'm very open-minded to it. And that is your unique story. I'll listen to those stories, but I really can't do anything with that. It is purely subjective to those people out there who say they can communicate with entities from other dimensions and from the stars. But I can really only work on with the things in my own field of perception. Now, to answer your question, it's a really good one. And I actually had this conversation rather recently with a Japanese UFO researcher by the name of Norio Hayakawa. And he had stated, based off of his research and from his understanding of the last 3 or 4 decades, rather long time, he believes that people are pre-selected. People that have UFO sightings, UFO encounters, or things of that nature are pre-selected to go ahead and have those experiences. So for these entities that go ahead and say telepathically, look up into the sky, or you're going to see this if you go there today, it is incredibly possible. I do not doubt it. I'm very open-minded to that possibility. And for those that do have telepathic powers such as yourself, I think it would simply make sense. But again, it would just depend on people's field of perception, and also if they're even open to that mentally to go ahead and receive that message telepathically as well.
Well, Leilani, we want to thank you for your call, and hopefully you'll call back again next week. Thank you for your call.
I will definitely tune in. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, too. All right. It seems like Martin Willis is having an issue, technical issue with his camera.
Oh, no.
We're going to get to the next call. We have Lee Spiegel calling in. So let's bring on Lee Spiegel. Lee, are you there?
I am here. Yes, I am.
And you're on with Christina.
Hello, Christina.
So good to hear from you, my friend.
Well, it's so good to see you. I'm so happy that you're still broadcasting from so high above the earth behind you. I just want to say, in my own opinion, that you have the freshest, most welcome, intelligent, well-versed voice now in the UFO field, especially in broadcasting and in wanting to get information out to people. You've been saying things that I didn't even know about, and hell, I thought I knew everything, but I'm wrong. It's so good to have you here, and I think when you get old geezers like Martin Willis and me still doing what we do after so long, I feel if we had more people like you around doing this kind of work, we're in really good hands with you. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Lee.
Lee, thank you.
Make my heart warm.
Can you actually hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So,
Martin, is this still your show, Martin?
No, I thought it was yours for a minute, but I thought it was Ken's show for a while. But anyway, my camera blew up, and when I try to get my camera to work, everything blows up. So I'm back. I don't know. Thanks for filling in for me, both Bill and Lee. We only have 2 minutes left. Can you believe that?
We do have one more caller. Lee, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Lee.
So I don't have anything. All that's gone. Bill, so who is it that's in there, Bill?
We have Ken left, if you want to go to Ken in Massachusetts.
Wait a minute. This is a Ken from Massachusetts, right?
Yes.
Okay, yes. All right, yeah, we have 2 minutes. Go ahead, Ken.
Hi, Ken. Christina. It's nice to see
there.
You. Can you hear me? Hi.
Yes.
It was nice to see someone young taking up the mantles in UFO ufology. I just had a quick question. I know you're limited for time. What's your personal opinion why the government kept it secret so long? Because obviously they have, because they admitted that they are real. So I'll take your answer after you.
Thank you, Ken.
There are, let me bring the volume back down. So there are a lot of theories. I guess for mine, it would be kind of hard to say, but I guess the biggest thing would be it's to have lied for so long, right? Project Blue Book beforehand and after, and then all of a sudden saying, oh, just kidding, UFOs are here, they've been here the whole time, that makes them look really bad. I mean, they are look like really, really bad. So they would be constantly digging holes from themselves with every lie that they say, and then saying that it's true, and then going back. And you can only tell so many lies before you trip up, you mess up, and then it shows, the whole world sees that you're actually lying. So the fact that they've lied so long, I guess because in their mentality, and this is merely speculation, that it's easier to constantly tell a lie than go ahead and tell a lie and then tell the truth and saying, oh, just kidding, actually this whole time we knew everything. It just doesn't look good for them. So that would be what I would say for the time being. I would need to do more research on that. So that answer might change in a few months. It could change tomorrow to why I think that. But at this point in time, that would be my best answer.
All right. What I'm doing now, Christina, is I'm putting your show in the links for the chat.
Thank you.
So people can go right there right now, because it's coming up right as soon as we end. So thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. A lot of fun. I'm glad my camera unblew up. So I'm back. But anyway, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. And keep doing what you're doing. We need you. We all need
you. I'm not going anywhere.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. All right, everyone. As I mentioned earlier, we have a Rendlesham Forest person coming on next week. His name is Monroe Nevels, and he will be on the same time. And then the day after that, we have a show on the Everything Else show about the environment. Thanks so much, everyone, for watching. And remember to keep your eyes to the skies.